All right, it is noon, so let's go ahead and get started. We have an incredibly packed agenda.
Microphone.
And here we go. I'm good. Okay. Someone's volume is on. Okay. Just falling apart over here, everyone. My name tag is falling into my popcorn. Get some feedback from Diane's computer. Okay, here we go. Calling us to order. Thank you all for being here. It's great to see so many folks in the room. I know that some folks had to join us virtually. I'm happy to have you for what is a bit of a marathon session today for both the Board of Governors and Board of Directors meeting. We will get started with the Board of Governors meeting, and having called us to order, the first action item is the consent agenda, which you'll find on tab 2 of your pre-reads, the draft minutes for the January 27, 2026 meeting. Sean's moved approval.
Second.
It's been seconded. Any further discussion? All in favor? Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. Excellent. Okay. So we'll move on next to the president's report, which will be about 37 minutes. I'll try to get through it. There's a lot to report on, which is super exciting. I apologize for not having sent an email, as I have been doing, flagging all of the action items. As you'll hear in my report, it was a bit of a hectic week last week. I'd like partial credit since I did email everyone about the budget. So I'd like a half a gold star, and we'll get back to that practice in advance of April's meeting. I want to say thanks to Darren for circulating the ambassador yesterday. Please be sure to share that with your networks by email or on social media. We had the youth lawfare was a couple Saturdays ago at DC Superior. It was super fun. Pepper, the court dog, was there, a personal highlight of mine, which was really great. There were a lot of very excited kids asking great questions. One high school freshman just emailed me this morning to see if they could have an internship at my law firm this summer. Love the ambition. I don't think we're hiring, but if anyone has any ideas for high school internships, please let me know. We also had the moot court competition a few weeks ago. I know some of you were involved in judging the earlier rounds. I had the honor of judging the finals alongside Judge J.P. Howard and Carolyn von Zeil, who's the D.C. Solicitor General. The teams were incredibly, incredibly impressive. One of the many great things about how this is run is that they do not tell you as a judge in advance the students' schools, which is great fun. So it made it very exciting to learn after the fact that the team that had won decisively, according to our judges, were a couple of first-gen students from UDC who beat Georgetown. And they were great. And the Georgetown kids were also great. But it was a really, really wonderful experience. And that was really fun to do. You'll enjoy that next year. There is has been some stuff going on with international bars and relationships to report on. There is an event this week at the French Embassy that we've been invited to. It is tomorrow night. It conflicts with the voluntary bar fair, but wanted to make sure that you all had that invitation. I was able to meet with new leadership at the Paris Bar while in New York last week. We had a really productive meeting, and they were sharing some of their initiatives, one of them being what they view as an economic state of emergency for lawyers in France, focused on the fact that lawyers don't know how to run a business quite frequently, which is not just a French problem. I shared with them what we do in terms of our practice management advisory service, and they were super interested in learning more about that support that we provide to members. They were also interested in our pro bono work and potentially setting up a relationship by which they could offer pro bono support to French folks who are living in the DC area. So we're going to make a connection on that front. They're very focused on leadership development. I shared with them about our John Payton Leadership Academy and that that's an initiative that a number of bars across the US have been doing. We're really interested in learning more about that. They also are highlighting women lawyer leaders as part of the new vice president's initiatives. And there is a rule of law symposium that they invited the DC bar to send a delegate for, which is happening in Paris in April, which I'll be attending. And while I'm there, they've asked me to participate in a session to record a video to inspire young lawyers as a woman leader, which I don't think is a prank, but it feels like it might be. Super, super exciting. I met with them when I was in New York last week because I also had the chance to speak at the UN during the Commission on the Status of Women on behalf of the bar and talk about access to justice issues as part of an event that was hosted by French ministers and supported by the Women's Forum for the Economy. The French Minister for Gender Equality spoke as well, as did a British minister and a number of other business leaders. Was really, really exciting. There was someone there from the Netherlands who was really interested in learning more about the unified, integrated system that we have in DC for domestic violence victims, which is something that our own Bob Spagnoletti helped set up. And so I expect that we're going to be hearing from folks from the Netherlands about what they might learn from our process here. So that was very exciting. We have, as a reminder, the voluntary bar BLI is happening all day tomorrow. Michelle Behnke will be speaking in the morning. I think that you all have invitations to that. Would love to have you there if you're able to join. Michelle is the president of the ABA, is just a wonderful human being and a great speaker, and I'm so glad that we've gotten her for this event. Hope to see you at the fair that is tomorrow evening as well. See, I have a lot of things on my list. Okay, I'm bouncing around here. Sorry, this is not in chronological order.
Tina, can I just do one thing?
Darren,
So,
please.
Dennis really has done a great job putting together the curriculum for the Voluntary Bar Leadership Institute, and especially getting these great speakers. Michelle Behnke is really a big honor, and we want as many folks in the room as possible when she is there. So, even if you haven't signed up and no expectation that you should now, just show up tomorrow. Dennis, it's between 10 and 11, right? And
10:30.
Michelle is going to be there?
10:30.
10:30. Okay, so sorry, Dennis. There's popcorn bite. But if you just come to the room where she's speaking, I think it'll be, and then you can leave right afterwards. Everybody can stay for the rest and come, come back for the fair that night. But it should be a really great event all around. So see you tomorrow.
Thanks, Darren. Speaking of BLI, BLI was last week, and Diane attended BLI. Both Bob and I spoke at BLI, which was great. I was asked to go and speak about AI usage and hacks for bar leaders, which was really great to get to share some of my learnings over the past year and the ways in which AI has helped save some of my Saturday mornings, although to be clear, not all of them, just some though. We have the event with Sonia Sotomayor coming up next week somehow. Hopefully you're all signed up for that. If not, I think there's quite a wait list. Really, really looking forward to that. Please be on time and be on time. I mean, be 20 minutes early. As you can imagine, the security around and for this event is very tight. We will not be able to let folks into the room after the event has started. It literally will be locked. So make sure that you give yourself plenty of time so that you don't miss it. Very, very excited about that. We have the Board of Governors Day at the Advice and Referral Clinic coming up on April 25th. Really hope you're all able to join for that. That's going to be great. It'll be here at the Bar Building. It's always such a good time to be at that Advice and Referral Clinic, and always leave feeling like we've done something practical and good for folks who are coming in the door. So please make sure to keep that on your calendars. Want to also share that we have started work for the president's reception coming up in June. Yeah, that's right. So please be sure to give to the president's reception, to the extent that you are asked to support fundraising for the president's reception, please, please be sure to do so. And Diane, if you'd like to chime in, I see you moving your microphone.
Oh. No, I'm just going to thank everyone because we've already had so much engagement, and I don't know what today's numbers are, but we were. But I'm going to let me defer to Kelly on that. But I would say we had a really nice first week where we were over 10% of the way to the goal. But for actual numbers, this is Kelly's show. So, but yeah, no, I'm very appreciative for the support and the energy about that.
And then I'll just close by sharing gratitude to Sean for leading the nominations committee. We will have a report from Sean, but I just wanted to be sure to thank you for all the hard work that you and the committee, and as I understand, this is the first time since Bob has taken over as CEO that we have not had to extend the deadline for submissions. And that is, I think, a testament to many things, not the least of which is that we all know Sean Ryan's a tight ship and has really kept things moving through that process. So thank you. It's going to be a great election season. Congratulations, Josh, on your nomination. And I say this not because I don't want everyone to know about the great work that the DC Bar does, but I'm really hoping that the New York Times and Rachel Maddow don't talk about us this year. And it's just one of the favorite things, my favorite things that I read last year on social media was that bar elections are generally just well-meaning nerds speaking amongst themselves. And I am delighted by the presence of so many well-meaning nerds. So with that, and exactly on time.
Exactly.
I close my president's report and send it over to Josh for the treasurer's report.
Thank you. All right, everyone have the. All right. I'm reporting on the financial results for the bar for the second quarter of the current fiscal year. We have our new format up that we all agree that we love because the last one was very detailed. This one captures it so easily. There's two sides. The first side is the statement of activities side. And because I'm old and blind, I have my own little printout. Okay, so statement of activities, which I will clarify for those who are not as well-versed as Marg. And these are like the activities we do on an annual basis. Like in a business, it's like the profits and spending, revenues and expenses. So these are... the bar ended the second quarter with a surplus from operations of $92,000, so a great surplus, and it was actually better than what we budgeted for. We assumed it was better than budgeted by $368,000, so we came out ahead. The major reasons for the surplus included strong performance from license renewals. We were at 123,321. Now we're at and what is it?
Just under 124,000.
Yeah, terrible. And we had some overall expense savings, particularly in professional fees and repairs and maintenance. However, we were over budget in personnel expenses from some accrued vacation leave. Our investment portfolio did well. We've earned $1.7 million year to date from our investments. So I like to repeat the good news. We earned $1.7 million year to date from our investments. Included in the investment income, including the investment income, the bar ends the second quarter with a surplus of $1.8 million, which is better than budgeted. We had budgeted for, we were better than budget by $2.1 million. So thanks to the investment committee for that great work too. Okay, now we're switching to the other side. If you go all the way to the right, it's the statement of financial position. So as of the last quarter, we... got $113 million in assets. It's an increase of $1.7 million compared to this time last year, which is really great. We received more in license fees and increased the value of our investment portfolio. The portfolio is valued at $36 million, which is an increase in $5 million or 17% from this time last year. So again, really great investment work. We're showing a decrease in our cash position on this chart, only because we took money from our operating cash and invested it in short-term fixed income investment strategies. The liabilities increased slightly as a result of the increased license fees received, which we have to report as an increase in the deferred revenue liability. As a result, our net assets stand at, if there was a drum roll, $41.1 million. So $41.1 million, an increase of $2 million compared to the same period last year. That concludes my report on the bar's financial results through December 31, 2025.
Thank you, Josh. Does anyone have any questions? We will move to...
Well, first, we want to welcome our new general counsel, Chris Ryan, who's sitting on my right here. I know he's met a few of you already. He began on March 2nd, so he's in week three, technically. He comes to us from Pansophic, where he'd been the general counsel. And before that, he was at Stride for more than a decade, and he helped take that company public. He's worked at the SEC. He's got an MBA. He's handled M&A transactions on multiple continents, and he was ACC's in-house counsel of the year, given out in D.C. He's getting a crash course on D.C. Bar Association World. He, in addition to just working, overlapping with Idem, who will be here until the end of the month, he also did go to the BLI with us last week. And so that's an opportunity for the chief staff officer and the senior staff to sit down with the incoming president. And we go through a whole series of sessions on bar leadership, board management, thinking through the next year and what it all looks like. It's also a chance to meet bar leaders from all over the country. Indeed, there were some international bar leaders there as well. And these are all the people that Diane, in her capacity as president next year, myself, I meet with all the CEOs, and of course, Chris will connect with many of like the general counsel and other senior leaders of the staff. So it was a really good, as I said, crash course in how the bar operates and what Bar Association World is all about. Sadina mentioned that we each presented on AI and how bar associations, particularly the DC bar, can use AI in its work with its staff and work with its members. Sadina presented to the bar leadership as a whole, so there was the volunteers as well as the staff. I presented in a separate session only to the bar execs, where I could kind of get in sort of the nitty-gritty a little bit more. And one of the things that came out of it was a real interest in our AI-powered lawyer referral service, which we call My DC Lawyer. We have been talking internally for some time about offering that system, because we own it, and Katarina has sort of redesigned the software in-house, to other bars to raise revenue for ourselves. And so we are currently putting together the business plan for that model. We've established an LLC, so it'll be housed separately from the bar's operations. It's called DC Bar Services Group, LLC. It's empty at the moment, but we think that if this launches and we are able to essentially sell the software or the operation system, if you will, it would be a managed system. We wouldn't actually just sell the code. We would help manage it. It would be a great revenue stream for the bar. And if there were other business streams that we decided we wanted to do, we could put it in an LLC to keep it separate and apart from the license fee funded parts of the organization. So again, it's on the table. We're sort of figuring it out and figuring out what the business plan might look like. But there's a huge amount of interest from our fellow bars for this kind of a lawyer referral service. Sean is going to tell you about the nominations committee and what it has done, I would like just to say that we are on track to begin the elections on April 15th, as it has been over the past 5 or 6 years. It will be online only and handled by our vendor, SBS. It will be the same way where you will all the members, each member will receive a link unique to them so they can go ahead and vote, but they can also log in to the DC Bar website and vote that way as well. For your calendars, I'll remind you that we're hosting a member reception on April 28th. It's open to the membership at large, but we've invited all the candidates in particular to come, and that way they can mingle and campaign and do the things that they do. The two president-elect candidates will be invited to make remarks at that time as well to the members. We are also scheduling, as we did last year, a virtual candidates forum, which we would do online with just the president-elect candidates, where members will be able to, in advance, submit questions they would like the candidates to answer, a few live questions as well. That'll be in May. I don't know if the date's been, has the date been set yet? No, yeah. All right. I know that we're working on the date with the candidates, but we'll certainly let you know in plenty of time. And then last but most certainly not least, I think is Adam still on? The
Yes.
still okay, good. I did want to take a moment publicly to thank Adam, who really has been an outstanding general counsel and a wonderful colleague. I mean, she has, as you all know, she was our first in-house general counsel and did a really fabulous job standing up that office and helping to define what the roles and responsibilities were going to be. She helped spearhead major governance developments at the bar. I mean, she worked with the now governance committee on revising the bylaws for the first time in 50 years, new DC bar rules governing the bar for the first time in 50 years, new charters for all of the committees to make them consistent and more effective. And she shares credit with Katerina for helping lead the effort to build My DC Lawyer, the lawyer referral service, among other things. She's been a really terrific teammate and colleague. We know she's going to be successful in her next chapter, and we owe her a great deal of gratitude for everything that she's done. As I mentioned, she'll be here through the end of March to overlap with Chris to help get him up and running. She's got some family stuff going on, which is why she's remote today. But Adam, I don't know if you wanted to say anything now or in April, come back and have an in-person chat with the board, but whatever you prefer.
I'll just say thanks for now. I don't have a lot of words at the moment, but I've really, it's been a joy and a privilege to serve in this capacity. And I know that the bar is going to be in great hands. And Chris has taken his seat, and I'm proud to see things moving forward and hopefully smoothly in the next couple of weeks. So thank you.
Thanks, Aaron. And that concludes my report.
Any questions? Okay. Hearing none, we will turn it to Sean for the report of the nominations committee.
Thank you, Sadina. So Sadina asked me to chair the nominations committee this year, which I was happy to do. She, as president, gets to select the members of the nominations committee. I thought you selected an outstanding group. For those of you who don't know, Angeline Chen was on the committee, former APABA DC president, Paulette Chapman, who's been on this board of governors, formerly chaired the nominations committee. I think she's the president of the Council on Court Excellence. Daniel Esmerel, who's former HBA DC president. Paul Lee, if you don't know Paul Lee, I'm not going to spend the time going into his bio here. Same thing with Pat McGlone. Amy Nelson, who many of you know, was also on the board of governors here. And so we met numerous times over the last few months. We think we had eight meetings, including three interviews with president-elect candidates. I would like to thank the bar staff for the massive amount of marketing they did to promote. It was everywhere. It was in standalone emails to the members. It was in the bar bulletin, on the website, posts on social media, including LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Multiple ads in Washington Lawyer and Smart Brief, and promoted at bar events, including the tax conference, which is very well attended. In total, we had 28 individuals nominate or self-nominate for 36 positions. So some people dual nominated for different positions. We needed at least two candidates each for president-elect, treasurer-elect, at least 10 for the five open Board of Governors seats, and at least four for the ABA seats. We met all of those requirements, plus one for the Board of Governors in case anybody dropped out for some reason, which has happened in the past. And then, of course, delivered our report to the Secretary on February 18th, which we are required to do. I can name the candidates very quickly if you haven't seen Amy Bess and Josh Mogul for President-elect, John Ingracia and Steve Miller for Treasurer-elect, Jim Bubar, Rebecca Cady, Jill Dash, Patrick English, Hillary Gerjoy, Shara Greer, Stephen Hallman, John Hopkins Gillespie, Mary Ann McGrail, Austin Owenby, and Mark Salzberg for the Board of Governors seats. There are five seats open. Josephine Bon, Laura Pazeski, Donald Quinn, and Joseph Sacca for the three open ABA seats, ABA delegate seats. As you mentioned earlier, we did meet the deadline. I was very insistent that we do that. The board, the committee took that very seriously. I would also like to thank Crystal and Iram for helping us get through that process because it is a massive amount of work, and this is something that I often praise Crystal behind the scenes for. one of the many unsung heroes here, just processing all of the applications, scheduling the meetings, getting us all the information, scheduling the interviews, huge amount of work. So we couldn't have done it without both Crystal and Iram. So thank you very much. And we do have one action item from the committee. We do need to recommend to the board approval of the one of the non-attorney members of the Board of Governors, which is in the information, and that is Dr. Francis Dong, who's sitting at the end there. So we recommend his reappointment to a full term as a non-attorney member of the Board of Governors. So with that, I will make that motion.
Second. Any further discussion? All in favor? Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. Congratulations, Dr. Goff.
If I can, before we leave just that issue, I do want to recognize Debbie Hearns, the new Director of Marketing and Communications. As Sean pointed out, there was a massive marketing effort that happened in order to produce such quality candidates and a sufficient number of candidates. She had just shown up when the whole campaign needed to launch, and in very short order, educated herself about the board governance, about the election, about what needed to be done, and pivoted in such a way that it really did result in, you know, sort of historic outpouring of candidates. As Sedina pointed out, we didn't need to extend the deadline for the first time as far as I can ever recall. So again, thanks, Debbie, and your team for really a wonderful, wonderful job.
My pleasure.
Excellent. Any questions on the nominations committee before we keep moving? Okay. The next item on the agenda is the appointment to fill the DC Bar delegate to the ABA House of Delegates vacancy. You may recall this is something that we had teed up at our last meeting that is related to Lori Masters' decision to resign as a DC Bar delegate and is now representing, is now, I think, BADC's delegate for the ABA House of Delegates. That left a vacancy. The process is that the person who would have won that election is asked if they would be willing and able to serve. Here it is Donald Quinn, who is on who's also on the slate because this is a micro appointment, if you will, but it is a vacancy. He has indicated that he is willing to fill the vacancy, that he would be next in line for according to our process. And so, as I think I had previewed at our last meeting, the recommendation to this body is that we appoint Donald Quinn to step into that position for the remainder of the term that Lori Masters was holding. And as I mentioned, and as you saw in the materials, he also is running for this seat on the election slate.
So moved.
The motion? Second? Any further discussion? Okay, all in favor? Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. Okay. Everyone is dying to get to the budget, Diane.
I know.
Like, get on with this, Sedina. Get on with this.
I need my watch. You do your last thing.
That's right. Do some power poses.
Read it.
Yes. Okay. So the next item on the agenda is the appointment to fill the vacancy, a micro vacancy and then a fuller term on the Judicial Evaluation Committee. So as you'll see in tab 8, there's a memo that walks through kind of where we are in this process here. Lloyd Liu was on this committee and has stepped down from the committee because of his recent appointment to the CJD. I can never.
The Committee on Judicial Disabilities
every
Attendance.
Every time. And so the JEC is in the process of meeting very soon to go over the judicial evaluations for this year. We have identified Ms. Fishberg as someone who previously was interested in and continued to be interested in serving where there's a gap, and had talked to the staff. I met with the staff about what we should do and how we should take care of that role. I'll just also note as well that when we were doing the call for the nominations committee, because we will have another two open seats on the JEC that we'll look to fill in June. This committee's on a slightly different calendar so that they can be up and running over the summer. And when things kick off in September, they are already comprised, have been able to meet and get to the planning. So that calendar is a little bit different. We actually did not have any candidates who identified themselves for those openings. That recruiting process and solicitations on that for June is ongoing, but just wanted to share that in terms of that process. And so as the memo lays out, my recommendation is to appoint Lisa to fill the remainder of Lloyd's term, and then to continue for an additional 3 years rather than appointing her for a couple of months. And then I would ask the board to do that again at that point in any event. But so that's the plan in the memo and the request for this group.
Can I just ask?
Yes.
Like in the memo, board tab said that it was very clear the rule, the bylaw related to who would be appointed, the next person with the most votes. What's the authority for this list?
It's like every other committee. The committees that are presidentially appointed with board approval. It's the same process. There is no default. You just go back to the same process to fill this vacancy as you would to originally appoint the member. So it would be a presidential recommendation with the board approval. For the elected, you know, and we fixed that, because with the ABA delegates for years, we did not have a process to fill the vacancy. And a few years ago, you might recall, we actually put a process in where the ABA delegates, if there was a vacancy, you go to the person who got the next greatest number of votes. Now, of course, for a committee appointment, that doesn't happen.
That's a good point, and I think feedback, because one of the things we've been working on this year that I've been trying to ask staff to do is to preview what questions folks may have if they've only just recently joined the board, and spelling out what the process is, what the procedure is, that type of thing. And as because we'll have two more appointments in June that are going to be recommended, I'll just note that we should just add a line in the memo to that effect, so that it's front of mind for folks as you're preparing for the materials. I think Karen was first, then we'll go to Shirley.
So am I correct, because the charter says that they point at the end of the term, and then there's something that says September 30th is the end of the term. It has been changed.
It
has.
That's right.
And so whatever appointments that are made today would be under the same president and the same board.
Yeah. What was happening is a number of committees were not even getting up and running into the middle of the fall for a bar year. And so they were losing 3 or 4 months. And so we've made an effort to shift them over time to where they can be up and running right at the beginning of a bar year, so that by the time you get to the fall, they will have already met, they've already organized, and they can go ahead and carry out their work. And the JEC is one of them where they literally meet by time if the appointment happens in September or October, which is what had happened in the past, they would meet in end of October, beginning of November to try to get an evaluation tool together that needed to launch a couple of weeks later. And that just seemed unfair to everybody involved, the judges who were being evaluated, the members of the committee. So we pushed it early. We're converting it over earlier, which is why we're doing this now. And so and as it happens, because Lloyd has left the committee, having done the evaluations, they are now all stacked up and need to be reviewed by the committee members to be screened to make sure that the members in their responses did not inadvertently identify themselves. And so we anonymize them through eliminating confidential information or things that might clue in the judge who's made the critique, the criticism, the feedback. But it's very labor intensive, which is why we want to get a person on the committee now rather than waiting until the end of June.
I think Shirley was next.
Yes, following on him. So it sounds like some committees It's just a presidential appointment, and others go through the screening committee. So this is one of those that is a presidential.
That's right.
That's correct.
The screening committee charter identifies which are go through the screening committee and all the rest are presidential appointments.
Think, Leila, yes.
How is the process for the two vacancies that are planned for June going to be different from this? Because this is initially to fill a vacancy, but there's also another three-year term being attached in this time.
Yep. So if we had only had the ones in June, I think that the process, first of all, we've been soliciting volunteers, which hasn't happened at this point. So there's recruitment efforts that are going on. Obviously, we urge all of you, as with all of our committees, to let us know if there's anyone you have in mind or would like to recommend. The staff works with to identify volunteers that it has worked with in the past. We will go back to folks who have applied previously and who have not been appointed to that and to other committees. And so this is an initial version of the same process that we are otherwise about to launch to make sure that we identify great candidates for appointments that I'll be recommending in June.
And the solicitation for volunteers is ongoing. I mean, it just carries on all year long. But a lot of the burden, candidly, falls on the staff to go out there and try to recruit folks or have other committee members recommend folks who might also do it. Lisa Fishberg, for example, she served on ACAB for I don't know how many years, 6 years. And so she was a known quantity, if you will, and had volunteered for the JEC once before. And so she was easy to then go to and say, hey, would you like to serve? And she, of course, agreed and then agreed to a three-year term after that. So, But again, we rely on all of you who know the bar really well also to reach out to your networks to see if we have many committees. Obviously, we have many committees. Some we get a fair number of volunteers for, some we don't get very many at all. And the JEC is super important. And in fact, Lloyd's committee, the Commission on Judicial Disabilities and Tenure, needs those evaluations, at least in part for the work that they do and giving feedback to the judges. So we would urge you to join us in the effort to try to recruit really good candidates. But again, we will be using the same presidential appointment process the way we do with other committees that come before you that do not go through the screening committee.
I'll make the motion. Lisa.
A motion? Seconded. Any further discussion? Okay, motion carries. And with that, 2 minutes late.
The moment you've been waiting for.
The moment everyone's been waiting for.
I meant you, because you don't have to do this.
I'm just going
to
put my mic off and drink some Diet Coke.
I'm jealous. Hello.
Okay, is this thing on? Because
I just had a question.
Yes.
Because the charters that you have in the packet, they don't necessarily reflect changes in terms of your terms. So if we could take a look at the charter again and make sure that it's lining up with the new term.
Yeah. That's a great call out.
Yeah. The goal is that every committee reviews, obviously with us, their charters every year. And so we'll make sure that okay, not only for the JEC, but for all of them, we do that same review.
Thanks, Karen.
Okay. Can everyone hear? I feel like it's been quiet today, which is not bad, but it's muted. So I want to make sure I'm coming through because we're talking about spending $49 million. And I think everyone should be able to hear me. So I trust everyone on the board reviewed the materials that we are part of the budget committee and our proposed budget for the next fiscal year, 26-27. And we had a lot of goals in mind, as we always do on the budget committee. We're going to maintain the same high level of member services that I promise you we are well known for. We're going to increase staff salaries to help offset the impact of continued inflation. We want to maximize staff retention and recruitment. We want to execute certain projects in support of the strategic plan, and we want to continue to meet member expectations while we're moderating the increase to license fees. So those are the five overarching goals. Next slide, please. Here are the members of the budget committee who I am going to thank. Sadina, Josh, Amanda, Margaret Cassidy, representing the Board of Professional Responsibility, Mark Salzberg and Gafar. Thank you. One person who maybe is not on this slide because she is not on this committee, but our CFO, Marg, I cannot even tell you, like, literally, the standing ovation. The committee is great. she is leading the way here. So everything that is substantively factual, she got us the information, she organized, made sure we understood it. So thank you, because this would be beyond, it would be impossible without Mark. Next slide, please. So the role of the budget committee, I hope everyone understands, but just to review, it's to assist this board in by overseeing the development of the budgets for both the bar and the pro bono center. You know, this doesn't just drop from the sky. Although, of course, every year there's a budget, and we certainly look to past years. Every year has different challenges and different things that come up. This year, we, for example, have the judicial bar conference, which is it's tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars that we have to find money for that is only an odd numbered year. So there are even numbered year, sorry. Odd, yeah. Okay, I had that right. And then in my head, I'm like, but it's 2026, right? So there's a lot that goes into this. And we wanted to ensure that the budgets align with our strategic plan and priorities and objectives. And so with the staff, we did a very careful review of the proposed division budgets. Next slide, please. So the staff was obviously instrumental in doing this, but let me talk about the role of the board. We are supposed to review and consider carefully what the budget committee's recommended annual budget and license fee rates are. We're supposed to ensure that the recommended budget is aligned with the strategic plan and objectives, and that we allocate our resources to meet organizational and program goals. We're supposed to approve license fee rates before renewal season begins on May 1. So we will typically vote on this at the April meeting, but we get all the information today and then we can think about it, worry about it, and raise any questions between now and April. But that May 1 annual budgets for the DC Bar and the Pro Bono Center, which, like I said, are just south of $50 million. So it feels like Monopoly money, but it's actually real. Next slide, please. Just to review, for those of you who have not yet been on the budget committee and don't understand exactly this timeline and how it works, it's helpful to understand what's been going on. This is a long, drawn out, but important, extensive process. So from September to February, we develop the budget and we consider various factors such as the strategic plan's priorities, economic conditions, historical analysis, third-party data or expertise when we need that, and conservative budgeting principles, as well as capital expenditures. As part of the process, the budget committee liaisons have meetings with division chiefs and with the Pro Bono Center's executive director. And then there are full budget committee meetings to talk about license fee factors, reserves, and all of the proposed budgets. Next slide, please. Then from March to April, which is right now, the Board of Governors and the Board of Directors meeting today, we hear from the budget committee chair, that's me, presenting the committee's recommendations. And we will ask the Board of Directors when we switch to that meeting to approve the fiscal year 27 PBC budget. The Board of Governors meeting that takes place next month on April 14th is when we vote on the license fee rate recommendations and when we vote on the DC Bar's budget. So we'll vote on one today, hopefully, and one in just over a month. Next slide, please. And I'm trying to talk through this part fast so we can talk about money, because I know everyone wants, where's all this $49 million coming from and going? So one principle that I've certainly seen in my years on the board and as a member of the budget committee and now as its chair is that there is conservative budgeting. The policy that is our guiding light is the budget should reflect conservative revenue and expense projections to avoid best or worst case scenarios. So the examples of where our budget does reflect conservative principles are the number of new members and the transition from active to other classes. Although it feels like one of those commercials, remember where like they tell two people and they tell two people and all of a sudden 2 weeks ago we had 123,321 members and now we have 124. It's like, yeah, everyone wants to be a member of our bar. So our numbers are growing, but we still, you know, there is a look back at how it's been growing, and we don't always assume just exponential growth. We also look at expected renewals before June 30th. We look at the funding of staff positions. We look at our cash flow. We look at grant revenue from the DC Bar Foundation and contributions revenue from license renewals and appeals. Next slide, please. Here are the key budget considerations. I love the license fee. If that, we're going to talk a bit about that, but we consider the strategic plan, economic conditions and the impact of inflation, other significant expenses and capital projects. You know, our building, just to give you a little preview, I mean, it's new and it's beautiful, and it also needs things sometimes, as do the people who work here. Bank loan covenants, reserves, operational history, license fee history, and member expectations. So as you can see, this is not just a shoot from the hip, kind of put the budget together because we have a meeting coming up practice. Next slide, please. Okay, reserves. And this is interesting because we have lots and lots of money in reserve, but it's required by our reserves policy. There are license fee funded reserves. So those go towards fixed asset and infrastructure, building maintenance and landlord, contingency expenses, client security fund, operating. There's also a CLE reserve and a communities reserve and a pro bono center reserve. And we will talk a little bit about the CLE reserve and the communities reserve because there will be changes that the investment committee is going to recommend to the reserves policy in light of the fact that now more of CLE and communities can be funded by license fees, which is a change. Then we also have undesignated net asset reserves. Next slide, please. So here's an overview, and no, I am not going to read out loud every single line, don't you worry, but you can at least see the trend in our reserve balances for both the bar on the left and for the pro bono center on the right, and how they have been exponentially increasing. Next slide, please. Okay, and same with this. I am not going to go into line by line on our organizational results with the license fee rate, but you can at least see how in the past number of years, how it's gone up. It's usually not an increase of very much. One year it did go down. There was obviously an impact from the pandemic on some of this, but the increase in our license fee rates and the changes in our net assets from operations, it's an interesting correlation, or maybe it's causation. Sorry, I'm not going to get into my, you could see what's happened, and yes, there will be a connection. Okay, next slide, please. We have a license fee ceiling that was set 11 years ago by the Court of Appeals, and it is $380, and now we've gone up despite our increases where we started, where we are. If this is, it'll go up if we are, I don't know the exact dollar amount. And I'm sorry, I think it was $9. It's going to go up a few, $9 from this chart if that's approved. We still have room in our ceiling for a few more years, as Bob says, before we have to go back and ask for an increase in this fee ceiling. And this has been thoughtfully implemented a little bit each year. One thing I've become very aware of in my role as president-elect in meetings I've gone to with other bars is that sometimes to get your fee ceiling raised is like asking, it's an impossible ask. Some bars are facing the potential for elimination by their legislators. So we don't have those problems. I think we have a Court of Appeals who understands what we need and what we need to be able to charge to provide what we provide. But I think we've also have a great history of implementing these changes to the license fee very thoughtfully after a lot of discussion and not doing enormous in the district, which is really something I had no awareness of until this past year. So I want to share that. This has been done really intentionally, and that's why we still have some room before we have to ask to raise the ceiling again. Next slide, please. All right. So what are our members' expectations? You know, as I always like to say, we are a mandatory bar and we don't really have to do much except cash the check and say you can practice law for another year. But that's not how we roll. And we do a lot for our members, and they expect it, and rightly so. So they want us, we want us, and our members want us to maintain or increase the level of programs and services we offer, to provide superior program content, to maintain our facilities, and to provide effective communication and technology, such as our website, the association management system, case management system, email marketing systems, online programming, social media, my DC lawyer, our referral service, and our magazine, Washington Lawyer. And I think we excel in all of these areas, but I don't think anyone's getting lazy. And certainly members will, you know, if you do a good job, they want more and better, but it certainly, and rightly so, but I don't think we have any issues with any of meeting or exceeding any of these expectations. Next slide, please. So what's new this year that affects how we spend our money is the rule that went into effect August 8th of 2025 about license fees. Now, they may be used by the DC Bar in furtherance of the purposes set forth in Rule I, Section 2, provided the activities are germane to regulating, Rule 1, sorry, the legal profession or improving the quality of legal services. And that will affect CLE and communities. And this aligns with the constitutional standards set forth in Keller versus State Bar of California, which sets forth a lot of guidance about what mandatory bars can and can't do and why we have certain restrictions we have on what we say, our public statements, and how we spend our money. Next slide, please. So what's new in the budget process this year? The areas of impact are CLE, because of the rule change now, all activities are eligible for license fee funds. Yay, Dennis. More money. Yay, we like money. Communities, almost all activities will be eligible for license fee funds. And for the pro bono center, some activities will be eligible for license fee funds. And the impact on the fiscal year 27 budget is that there's a couple of impacts. The budget's going to include a phased-in implementation of the revised rule. The CLE will be budgeted under license fee funded activities. Communities will be budgeted under license fee funded activities. And the pro bono center budgeting will be the same, but there's going to be a year-end reconciliation, which will maybe not be on my watch, but whoever is next, maybe.
Well, it'll be the fiscal year.
Fiscal year.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll have a little something to do with that, but check back next year this time. Okay. Next slide, please. So our proposed budget for the bar for all funds, license fee and non-license fee funded activities, we have a budgeted deficit, which will be explained in more detail in a bit, of $566,053. And yes, I know I often get the question, and I think, you know, maybe I'll ask Marg, because she's going to be more artful at explaining it than I am, about why we operate in a deficit. It has to do with conservative budgeting. And I don't know if maybe we wait till the end to go through that, but I just want everyone to know, if you're wondering that, yes, I understand that you would be wondering it, and we'll talk about it. And by we, I mean Marg. But we are proposing a 4.9% increase in revenue. Well, I should say that the budget proposes a 4.9% increase in revenue to $48.8 million, which is achieved through a $9, 2.6% increase in the active license fee rate, so going up to $357, and the active members increase of 3.6% to, because we have 94,669 active members, I guess that'll change.
So that is what the projected increase would be. It would increase the number of members by 3.6%. That would bring us to 94,669
right.
of active members. So that when you then, at $9 per active member, that's where you would get that amount of money.
Thank you.
No problem.
Now, for inactive license fee rate, that would go up $5 per member. And again, the projection is that we will have a 1% increase in inactive members to 19,329. And we have increase of $3 per judicial license. It's a 1.9% increase, so their rate would become 160, and we are anticipating an increase in the judicial members of 4.4% to 1,221 members. Next slide, please. So our budget also proposes a 4.8% increase in expenses to $49.1 million. And where are those expenses coming from? There is a 3.5% merit pool and a 2% pool for market adjustments that's being proposed. The 40% fringe benefits rate for employee benefits, which includes, of course, higher health insurance costs. We are not anticipating a change in headcount, and there are actually freezes on hiring for some vacant. The impact of inflation. Right now, there are 4.2 frozen FTEs, full-time employees, and a slight increase in building cost expenses per square foot from $61.82 per square foot last year to $64.10 per square foot for next fiscal year. So those are the increases to the budget. Then there is the Biennial Judicial and Bar Conference, which adds $270,000 in expenses to the budget, but we found, and we always do seem to find the money for this very expensive and lovely event. But, you know, most of us just don't have over $250,000 laying around waiting to be spent. If you do, I will give you my cell number. Reach out to me. But that is something that is an every other year expense. The Client Security Trust Fund has a budget of $250,000 for covering payments of estimated claims. Can't always know what those will be. And a capital budget of $1,101,179. And some of the things that are in that capital budget, the main things are AI automation tool for the Office of Disciplinary Counsel, some AV upgrades for the second and third floors. There is tenant construction on the seventh floor. There are some building related repairs and upgrades. I learned that we had a bird strike on some windows that resulted in glass repairs. Who would have thought? Because we don't have a big piece of plywood in the where the glass used to be, because this building is maintained beautifully. Network and hardware replacement and new human resources software. Next slide, please. Okay, so this proposed fiscal year 27 budget maintains the high level of services supporting our strategic plan. It increases staff salaries to offset the impact of inflation and maximize recruitment and retention so we can keep our status as one of Washington Post's best places to work. We freeze hiring on some vacant positions to mitigate that impact of inflation. Like I mentioned, 4.2 FTEs are frozen, and we share the impact of inflation while we're controlling the license fee increase. So here's a chart. Again, not going to read everything, but it just summarizes what we've been through with the proposed license fee rates and the change for each category. Okay, next slide, please. Definitely not reading through all of this, promise, but I just want everyone to understand where we fall. I think we are in the 60th percentile.
Yeah, we're 30 out of 51 jurisdictions.
Right. For the cost. So if you move to Oregon, it will cost you $683 to a year just to practice law, just to have, and I don't even know what they offer, but after, again, what I have been exposed to at meetings and stuff, not that we can't all learn, but we are leading an unbelievable bar in terms of what we do and what we offer and what our staff does. We are really fortunate. And not that it wouldn't be lovely to save some money and live in Maryland. I mean, well, Maryland. Okay, let me go to Nebraska. The lowest, $98 a year to practice law in Nebraska. But I think for what we get and what we spend, it's great ROI. So just so you have the results of last year's benchmark survey. Next slide, please. Okay, so here is the summary of what our budget committee recommends for our fiscal year 27 budget. But again, to summarize, a budgeted deficit of $566,053, which is $34,000 less than last year. Active license fee rate, $357. Inactive license fee rate of $222. Judicial license fee rate of $160. Capital budget, for all those things we talked about that need fixing or purchasing, $1,101,179. And then undesignated reserves of $4.7 million before that the reserves policy might change, that would be available to cover a deficit. And remember, the budgeted deficit is 566. Okay, so here is the proposed budget in summary for the DC bar. This is separate from the pro bono center. I don't know if we're going to get fun graphics with colors and circles.
I think Mark can hit the button and do it.
If you like to,
there it is.
I know you guys love that. So just so you see our bottom line, you know, with the change in the net assets and the budget from last year, the variance and the actual. Okay, that was where the circles stopped. But I just wanted to give you your moment. I know you. It's really you love awesome. That.
Moment. Bob's moment.
Both. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, well, I guess it's a good place to stop.
Would you just go back one slide, Mark? That way it'll be up in case people have questions.
Yes. I didn't realize that we had hit the end of the line of the slides, but I knew it, but I'd forgotten it. So
looks like Shirley has her hand up.
Yes.
What was the rate of increase in judicial active members from the previous year to this year?
Judicial?
Just for judicial.
$3? The one we're
percentage
proposing?
Of member increase.
Oh, 4.1 number of judge of people who would register as judicial members?
Yes, because yeah. It sounds like here we're expecting a 4.4% increase. Is yeah. that realistic?
Yes. I mean, the thing is that we've been a little bit more forgiving in what we consider, like people self-identify whether or not they're going to sign be a judicial member. Like we're not going across the country checking to make sure that they're actually judges, right? We trust them to self-report. But judicial law clerks, for example, have also been able to register by they're projecting the increase. I mean, and I just put this all in perspective, at 1,000 judicial members, an increase of $3 is a net increase in the budget of $3,000 and then a $50 million budget, just to put it in perspective.
Yes. I saw that you are not filling certain positions to maintain budget. Is that changed from last year? Because my recollection is that you didn't fill all the positions last year. And so is that a change from what we projected last year?
It is. I think that I don't know what the exact number of FTEs were, but you're right, Karen, that we did last year also freeze a number of positions. And they're not exactly the same in that I think we've added one more. I don't for sure because it's in the executive office that we've frozen one of the executive office positions as well. So because we don't intend to hire during the course of the year. So that while we have the FTE, we've got the space, if you will, we're not planning on the funding for that position.
My recollection is that it was between 3.5 and 4.
Yeah, it was somewhere in that number. I don't remember the exact number, but it was roughly the same.
And then my concern is that if we constantly say we're not going to hire a position, at what point do they no longer become a position because you're not hiring to fill that position?
Yeah, so they're obviously not we don't advertise them, and so they're not out in the public. And we do very carefully consider. In fact, one of the things that happened with this budget, as Diane pointed out, is that we have to absorb a net increase in expenses of $270,000 to cover the Judicial and Bar Conference. So we swing back and forth, and we have to find that money. You will see based on the bottom line of the budget that we actually come in better than last year by $34,000, which means we found, on top of the increases in salaries, increases in fringe, we found $300,000, if you include the $30,000 that we saved, we found $300,000 by carefully examining everything that we do, seeing where we could, I reduced an FTE in order to meet the members in the middle, because we knew we were going to have to ask for some license fee increase, but for every $90,000 of expense, we had to ask for another dollar in active member license fees.
Right.
So we managed to do it. And I think we make a calculus every year about these positions. So for example, if we think that there might be a need during the course of the year to fill one of these, well, obviously we'll have to think about where the salary money is going to come from the salary line, but we haven't erased the space. Like we haven't erased the actual position And you know this well because you run an organization. So each year we make a critical analysis. Do we want to keep them on the books as an empty FTE, or do we want to let it go for all time? And so we made the calculus that for this year, we want to keep those four FTEs. If for some reason we were to need them for a particular purpose or function but yet not having them funded. And I will point out that we've basically been in the same number with given, except for maybe one or two positions, since I've been here, right? So, but yet we grow at a rate of about 3,000 net new members every year. So we are serving thousands and thousands of additional members with essentially the same staff and keeping it one of Washington Post's top workplaces. So we're really balancing, I think, what we do for the staff by paying them fairly. I mean, they're not making exorbitant amounts of money. We give them great benefits. And we also ensure that when they do need support, we're able to give them the support that they need.
Yes.
Is there a reason we don't split the cost of the judicial conference across 2 years?
So, I mean, part of it is because we have to budget in the year. We have the expense. I mean, we could like try to save money, but then again, we're already building a deficit budget. We'd have to build a bigger deficit budget to put $135,000 away for the following year. The answer to all this is actually to charge people to go as opposed to comping them all. But the court asks us to do it, so we do. The court does make a contribution, but it's very tiny. And critically and most fundamentally, the court insists that it be done at the Reagan International Center, which is one of the most expensive venues in the city. And that's what really drives the cost, because it's their catering, it's their IT, it's their AV, it's all the different rooms that they want to use. I mean, it is incredibly expensive. And still, the members pick up only, to, I mean, I don't know what the total all-in cost is. That's just shy of $1 million. And the net cost, additional cost to the members, because we can do everything else, is about $270,000. We've raised this with the court, I mean, year after year after year. I'm sorry. So there are 100, they're in different pieces. So the DC Bar and Disciplinary Council together are about 170-ish, 180. I don't know the exact FT number, but it's roughly that. And then the Pro Bono Center's got another 39.
Thank you.
But license fees, everything we've been talking about here, all these activities fund, all of the DC Bar staff, the Office of Disciplinary Counsel, and the Board of Professional Responsibility. Give or take, roughly.
Question about the AI automation.
Sorry, Tony, I've skipped over them 9 times.
The AI automation platform for ODC,
yeah, yeah.
Is that being created in-house? Are you getting a vendor?
It's a combination. Katarina has, are you here? There you are. Katarina has already been working on a model, but we will actually have to engage some outside use, of course, as we need a large language model to make the whole thing work. And just so that you know what they're asking for, which candidly, I am thrilled to try to help out, but rather surprised that they actually asked for it, is that they wanted an AI system to help them review initial complaints when they get volumes of documents and a complaint, to help create a timeline to summarize and also to maybe propose what potential violations may have occurred. Then of course there'd be human review, and it has to be in a closed system, of course, so that it won't go back out into the bigger world. But the fact, anything to speed up the disciplinary process is fantastic. And as you all know, there are a number of us who've been put on a working group with the court and ODC and BPR to come up with a new model of the way they're going to operate. And the fact that they're looking at technologies being part of this and new business processes, fantastic. So I'm more than happy to invest the resources to make this work.
You know roughly how much that is?
I think it's about 100 grand.
Yeah, we estimate 150, depending how much we can do in-house.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're very excited, so they're continually can these translate? Because they get a lot of complaints in other languages, but they need to get, the complaints might be in English, but the supporting documents might be in other languages. We need to introduce also some translation elements. So they're really excited about the solution. So we're excited too. Because
yeah,
it's
they
cool.
And they, I look, we offer all the time to help out in any way possible. So they don't ask. Yeah, actually, they don't ask for very much. And so when they do, we try very hard to give them the support that they need. Mr. Capolino.
Bob, on the projected deficit, do we typically cover that year to year in reality from either higher revenues or less spending? Or do I know if we have any historical data on that? And if not, how do we cover that?
Yeah, I've been here since 2017, and we always do way better than budget because we do drive more revenue. We've different ways, and also reduce the expenses and control the expenses. The conservative budgeting principles that Diane mentioned before recognizes that we can only guesstimate the number of new members that we're going to have, the number of people who are going to resign, retire, or leave the bar, the number who are going to convert from active to inactive. You see, the number of inactive members, the increase of that is lower, is like 1% as opposed to a 3% projected increase in active members. That's because many fewer members are moving from active to inactive. And which is great. It's great for us. We want to have more active members. It's good for the budget, but it's also good to keep them engaged. But you'll see in this slide right here, going back to the FY 2019 year, where we ended just on the operations basis. We can't control the investments, right? So, but this is the operations basis. And we have continually done better than budget. And this is like an actual, surplus, if you will. And as of this year so far, even though we have a deficit budget, we're up by, $55,000. And we'll land the year, I assume, based on what we're doing, in a positive position. So we haven't needed to go to the reserves. Another good indicator of how well we're doing in terms of managing the money throughout the year is that starting 2 years ago, Mark started putting all of the license fees that we got in the summertime into these short-term fixed income accounts, the investment accounts. And so it sits there generating an enormous amount of interest. And all we do is draw down when we need it in order to pay payroll or bills or expenses or whatever. And the amount of interest we've generated is in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, which is part of the increased revenue that we see that allows us to go ahead and balance this out. It also means that for 3 years in a row now, we've not had to draw on our line of credit, which the borrower didn't done. We get to the end of the year, we've spent down all of our cash, we use a line of credit, we start license renewal, we get an infusion of cash, and we pay that off. We haven't had to do it. This will be the third year in a row. We have not had to do that, which also helps us improve the bottom line because then we're not paying tens of thousands of dollars of interest for a short-term line of credit loan. So to answer your question, Tony, is that yes, we do better than budget. Even though we build a deficit budget, we do it because we anticipate the low number of new members, the low amount of revenue that we're going to drive to be safe so we don't overpromise and underdeliver. But yet we're getting closer. Every year we get closer. FY 23, we're $800,000 to the good. So FY 24, $770 to the good. FY 25, $237 to the good. So even though the budgeted deficit we have this year is pretty much the same as last year, there's every reason to expect we'll continue to outperform it in a way that doesn't require us to rely on reserves. And we do have all in $40 million of reserves, including all the cash. We are well positioned and well funded.
What scenario analyses were done where the license fees were not increased? I think last year there was something in the slide presentation about that, and this year I don't see it.
We did all at the budget committee level internally rather than showing all multiple scenarios. We just brought the recommendation of what the budget committee actually recommended to the board. But we actually have a tool where you can knock down license fees and you can in just to be, as I said before, for every dollar of license fees for active member, it's $90,000, right? You can look at it that way in terms of revenue. So if, for example, you were to charge $8 for active members, you can add $90,000 to the deficit. Right? So that's kind of the way that this all goes.
Bob, let me also chime in that when we're doing the different scenarios, one of the things that we have to check is to make sure that we meet the bank loan covenants. Bank loan
covenants, like a CFO,
certain amount of cash flow that gets generated because we need to be able to meet our mortgage obligations. So that's like the minimum. So when we do the scenarios, that is definitely one of the factors that we're looking at. So if we've got inflation and we have increased expenses, especially because it's a JBC year, you know, not raising license fees is not going to allow us to make that cash flow minimum for the bank loan covenants.
Well, I mean, thank you for that. I mean, I remember last year the loan covenants was part of the reason for the license fee increase that time. This time, inflation is being mentioned more. I think it would be helpful for all of us to understand how much of the proposed changes are attributable to inflation as opposed to the loan covenants. And why is the loan covenant issue, like, why is it still an issue?
The loan covenant will be an issue for the life of the loan forever.
No. I'm saying, why is it a reason to be increasing the fees every year?
If there, the loan covenants are a ratio of cash and expenses. Expenses will always go up, right? Expenses are going up as a result of inflation and other factors. So the cash has to go up in order to meet otherwise we have to cut other expenses, stop doing things in order to make sure that we have enough cash to meet the proportion of expenses. So it is always going to be the case. It is the necessary factor of having a covenant that we will have to be paying attention to how much cash is coming in and what the level of expenses are going out. Healthcare, right? Put aside inflation as it might impact things like utility costs, electricity costs, and internet costs and the rest. Healthcare alone is going up 7 or 8%. And so in order to make sure that we've got the right proportion, the right ratio, we've got to be able to generate enough cash in order to meet that.
So the quantitative information you're providing would be helpful to have, as these slides would also be helpful to have for all the board members.
We're happy to share the slides. And the budget committee did take a look at all of this information.
The gains from the short-term investment able to be counted toward those cash flows or not?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's just
But we don't budget it.
That's what. Okay. Right. Because it's not guaranteed.
Because you can't know. You can't know in advance what's going to. If the interest rates collapse, right? If we go down to a 0.01% interest rate, it'll be meaningless to go ahead and do it. So that's why the conservative budgeting is so critical, is that we don't anticipate things that we cannot necessarily control. Even if, look, a 3% increase in membership. I mean, we got 123,000 members. Right? That's assuming we're going to get a net gain, ultimately, of more than 3,000 new members. I said this when I was talking to the other bar execs. I said, don't hate us. Because they're all struggling for members, right? They're all struggling to get members in their bar. Like, don't hate us, but like on an annual basis, I can count on a net increase of about 3,000 new members. In truth, it may be 3,500 when the year shakes out. Depends on how many people take the bar, how many people waive in, whether the DC Court of Appeals is considering modifying its waive-in rules. It may get impacted by the change in ABA accreditation by other law schools, and will we accept? Like, there's a million things that could affect that. So we take a conservative view of the number of new people walking in the door. Maybe there'll be mass retirement at some point, and we're going to lose a whole bunch of our senior members, or they'll all go inactive. So we try to, again, take a conservative view to build this.
Josh.
Well, echo that the budget committee meetings were long. I just want to echo that the budget committee meetings were long, tedious, and wonderful.
And there were a lot of them.
Yeah. And I promise I asked many of the questions around this table. A lot of the questions, there are some larger policy questions. For example, will we, like, the Reagan Building is about to be the headquarters of the FBI, so that might free us up in the future. There are other opportunities we can think about to, like, tier the membership dues, as other bars have done. So there are some bigger questions we can take back and think about before the next budget process. But and I'd be excited to do that with all of you. But I promise that these this was, like, a very thorough, detailed process. And am I excited to raise dues? No. Am I excited to raise the dues on judges? Definitely not. Do we have costs and do we provide services to our members? Yes. And can we and should we be doing more to support government and public interest attorneys that don't have the resources to attend our judicial conference or pay our dues. Absolutely. And that's something I will be, once this budget process is over and before we start the next one, I think there's a lot of work we can do to find out how to make life easier for members of our bar. But thank you to the budget committee for all their great work.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Josh, because that was my concern about public interest in the flow of attorneys that I heard the last number was 9,000 government attorneys left. And so we're looking for jobs and have issues struggling for that. So if we can pay attention to that, would be great. And the other piece was, I think, messaging when these dues increases do happen and get approved, that we convey to the membership why we're doing it, the necessity for it, the benefits they're getting from it, all of that.
Yeah, we do. And the marketing team, particularly over the past several years, have been very effective at getting out what it is that you're getting for your license fees. And candidly, we get virtually no complaints. Like, even we've raised them all a couple of bucks over the past several years, and we get no more than a handful of complaints.
I want to be, oh, go ahead, Bennett.
I was just struck by the NABE benchmark survey. I was surprised where almost everything in our city, it costs more than anywhere else. And here we are around the middle of the pack or below. Could you just say one more time what we're at, what we're comparing there? I think we were comparing total cost.
So this is the total cost of practice. And mm-hmm. so every state is slightly different in how they mm-hmm. do this, because in some states you have to pay the court for your license fee, but you have to also pay a client security fund fee, or you're required to pay an access to justice fee. Every state is slightly different. So what NABE does, the National Association of Bar Executives, and this is actually a help put together by the Center for Bar Leadership and the ABA, they survey all the jurisdictions, and you give them all the constituent parts of what you need if you want to hold on to your license of practice law. That's what this is. And it's interesting, because I've known about this for a long time, but when you look at the list, and we're 30 out of 51, which is great. But you also have to factor in like some of the big bars are at the end, right? New York is at the end. Florida is towards the end. Texas is below us, but not that far behind. But New York is not a mandatory bar. I mean, you have to pay the court, but you get nothing. I'm a member of the New York bar. I'm a member of the Third Judicial Department. I pay my, whatever is $200-something to them. And then they forget about me. But if I want to join the New York State Bar Association, which is voluntary, it's like $400, right? So all the services that we would get as being a member of the DC bar, you'd have to pay like $700 to get, as opposed to here where you get your license and all your services and access to CLE and access to the communities and lawyers assistance program and regulation, all the regulation, ethics hotline and the rest. So that, which is, so West Virginia is another, I know way too much about these states. So West Virginia is at 250. And they are one of the states that Diane mentioned that are going, they have to go to their state legislature to increase. And they have not been able to get them to move it in 20 years. So they're going, asking for a new license fee rate of $450, which is going to put them in column number one, about two thirds of the way down in one fell swoop. And so West Virginia has 4,000 members, give or take, right? What do you think they are going to do when the legislature says or considers whether or not their license fees are going to go up? They're going to go apoplectic, which is why we try to do this to get folks used to the idea that we provide you great services. We are an incredible bar. You're going to get a ton of stuff from us. We're there when you need us, even if you don't need us all the time. We're there when you need us. And we don't cost all that much money. It is the reason why we have 124,000 members, because people don't leave. I think the average length of membership once you become a member is like 23 years. And that's the average, because it's cost effective to stay a member of the DC bar. And you could see that in here. Oregon is a unified bar. They're like us, and they do provide a ton of services. But like they don't do anything different than we're doing. In fact, and they pay for the disciplinary system the same way that we do, as does Hawaii and Alaska and Connecticut. Connecticut's not a mandatory bar, but that's your mandatory fee. So if you want to join the Connecticut State Bar Association, it's entirely separate. So that's why we just look at the total cost of practice. But still, we are incredibly cost effective for what we provide. And even after, I mean, even after the proposed license fee rate, assuming a bunch of these will go up slightly as well, we'll still be in, we've always been in the, but definitely the bottom half, sometimes the bottom third of the list.
These are excellent questions, and this is a great dialogue for us to be having. I'm going to suggest that we pause on the bar budget because we will not be voting on that until April. There is time between now and then, and please make sure that you share those questions, and we can continue to address those. I want to because there is a hope that we would be in a position as a board be comfortable because we do not have a board of directors meeting in April. We only have a board of governors meeting. We're going to talk in the Pro Bono Center directors meeting about that budget, but I want to make sure that we have some time for that, Diane, so that we can give this budget the care and attention that it needs as well.
Yeah. So thank you. And so we would definitely urge to ask questions or send them so that we can respond to everyone by email before April on our bar's budget. And I appreciate the energy and the interest. I mean, I think when you're spending that kind of money, there should be questions. It'd be helpful to not have to do them all at the, you know, at the meeting. That way we can prepare and get information if we need it ahead of it. Okay, so the Pro Bono Center, quicker conversation, but very, very important, but it will not be as long as the first budget. So the proposed budget for the Pro Bono Center for fiscal year 27 has a budgeted deficit of $775,426. There is a proposed 7.4 increase in revenue, which is going up to $6.26 million. The increase comes from an increase in DC Bar Foundation grant funding. There's a slight decrease in contributions revenue based on fiscal year 26 renewal experience. And there is going to be a diversification of revenue streams. So we are going to be increasing trainings by the nonprofit and small business program. Next slide, please. Okay. There will be a 7.8% increase in expenses, that's what's proposed, to $7 million. We have to control our spend down of reserves. We need to have reserves, and also funders need to see we're spending our money and not just collecting it. There is a 3.5% merit pool and a 2% pool for market adjustments. We are adding one grant. We propose to add one grant-funded position. The fringe benefits rate is 40%, and that's an employee benefit. So, of course, again, higher health insurance costs. And as with the bar, we're prioritizing employee retention and recruitment. Next slide, please. Okay, thank you. The additional increase in expenses is because there will be support for the client advisory board. We're going to expand in-house fundraising capabilities. There will be a slight increase in administrative support allocation. So the value of services provided by the DC Bar License Fee Funded staff to support the work of the Pro Bono Center, and the occupancy costs of $53 a square foot remain unchanged. Okay, so for the recommendation of the budget committee, the proposed budget would continue to enhance core services and the realignment of resources. We will increase staff salaries to offset the impact of inflation and will maximize recruitment and retention. Again, adding one grant-funded position and controlling the spend down of reserves to address funders' concerns. It's a tightrope between collecting money, spending it, and making sure we have enough for a rainy day. So that's a little tight, you know, dance that we have to do. And again, I know this is just to summarize, again, I promised you it'd be quick, but here are the recommendations. This budgeted deficit of $775,426, diversify our revenue streams, support the client advisory board, and we would have undesignated reserves of $5.3 million to cover any deficit from fiscal year 27 operations, which again are budgeted to be 775. Next slide, please. Okay, so here's with the fun animation for this is the overall picture of the Pro Bono Center. Mar gets to like do her little thing, which I love. And again, a thank you for all of this information. But here is a summary of last year's budget versus this and the variance and where we would like to end up in terms of a a deficit, which I hate to say we want to end up with a deficit, but everyone, I hope, understands why. Again, the principles of conservative budgeting. And if we can certainly take questions on this budget, but this is one that we will, when we go in session as the board of directors of the Pro Bono Center, we can and would like to vote on this today.
You want to hold questions until the second session? Or
I think, let's just go ahead and do questions now. Yeah.
I have a question. I noticed in looking at some of the data on the Pro Bono Center that the total revenue is pretty close to the total personnel expenses. And I'm just wondering, where do you get the money to do all of the other things that you do, like training, like the advice clinic, the courses, like actually representing people pro bono in court?
So we have grant generated revenue, but yeah, contributions, right? So
for that's not your.
So yeah, so all of it is, and so for our gifts and. For our gifts and contributions, it will include our campaigns. It would include the president's reception, and the other registrations are the training revenue that we have.
It just seems like all the revenue is going to personnel.
It's going to come out of reserves.
I see.
It'll come out of reserves. Or if we have investment gains, which the Pro Bono Center has had, it would get paid out of that first. And then if we run a deficit, it would come out of the reserves. So that's part of the plan to do this controlled spend down of reserves, which is reserves have been increasing because our investments have been doing really, really well. And so by budgeting these deficits, we can kind of burn that down a little bit so that we can attract a greater variety of funders who are interested or want to make sure that the money that they are giving is going to programming and not just going to build our reserves, if that makes sense.
The other thing I would say is that we, like the bar, the Bar Center does better in operation. So it does better at the end than the original budget anticipated because we are so conservative in what we've done. The other thing that I would say is that because of the change in the rule, that now allows greater use of license fees. Well, we talked about doing a sort of phased in implementation of the new rule. One of the things that we will do is that in year end, the Pro Bono Center will take a look back at what activities could be properly funded with license fees, and then basically make a contribution, if you will, to the Pro Bono Center to offset that. But that will depend on the activities that they engage in over the course of the year. It is difficult to front load that with the Pro Bono Center because you have to sort of anticipate the activities, but also because they are grant funded on a calendar basis, not on a fiscal year basis. So we'd have to make guesses about what it would be. It's easier to do a reconciliation. Yeah. So last year, I don't remember exactly what the bottom line was, the very end of FY25, but they did significantly better than budget.
Shirley?
How much of the revenue depends on the DC access to justice that the DC council proposes, and what would be the impact if that were to go away?
Do you want to use the word devastating?
So we received a level funding, so $2.4 million. It actually would be very catastrophic if there was a decrease. And so you will be hearing from me and my team later on when we are asking this board to kind of advocate for us for the Access to Justice Initiative funding, because the funds, those public funds from the DC Council, and I know Karen knows as well, it funds our programs and services. And you can see that if that was eliminated, because there are other priorities that the council will have, particularly for this calendar year, that is very important that initiative is funded.
Can I ask? I know exactly what Kelly's talking about, obviously, because I'm Neighborhood Legal Services Program. But I thought I saw that you're counting on an increase from DCBF. And so given the fact that in the last 3 years they've held level on funding, how do we budget for an increase when
you know, it's really touch and go with the council as to being able to make level funding. So where does that come from?
Yeah, and I can say that when we budgeted, it was increase in DCBF and also other grants, right? And so we are being much more active in making sure that we are applying for other foundational funding.
Diversifying your funding.
That is correct.
A question to dovetail off of that response. In terms of the level of grants and the types of grants, are there certain limitations that are impacting budgets on those grants that you're getting?
So right now we have not found limitations in terms of grants. What we are doing is there are certain clinics, very popular clinics. So for instance, our advice and referral clinic is not grant funded, but it is a very popular clinic. For our nonprofit and small business programs, that traditionally has not been grant funded. And as you all know, that we received $150,000 from Wells Fargo. And so we really are, and because we have so many programs and we have different kind of clientele and entities and individuals, we are able to really start applying for many more foundational grants kind of all across the board to make sure that we are grant funded, with particularly with a lot of our popular programs.
Good to hear. Thank you.
Yes. So I'm smiling because we have a new director of development and communications, and you will meet him during our board of directors. Yes, Karen, I feel the exact same.
Other questions on the pro bono center budget? Okay. Well, hearing none, I would like to take the opportunity to thank the budget committee, thank Marg, thank Diane for leading so ably. Just everyone's away, it's still good. Excellent.
Thank you.
So with that, we are going